I'm joined on the telephone now by the Sinn Féin candidate for the forthcoming presidential elections, Leah Ní Rida. Leah, good morning. Tommy, good morning, Buicus Lydia, and that's about as much Irish as I have, I'm afraid.
That's all right.
I suppose we'll jump straight in on that subject. The Irish language, you mentioned in numerous interviews and indeed on text interviews as well. You're proud of your Irish culture. How important is the Irish language in the current world we're living in?
I think it's absolutely vital that we are proud of our language. It's our part of our identity. As you know, Ger, I'm from the Gaeltacht. I'm a Ban Gaeltacht, as I'm always saying, and it was my first language. And I'd like others to... And there is a huge sense, I think, of the general public loving the language, and they may not be able to speak it, but that doesn't mean to say that they don't have great time for it. It's part of our constitution. It's the first language of this country, and particularly when you're abroad and at home, it's great to be able to speak your own language. And I think as the Uachtaráin, being part of the constitution, they should have Gaeilge. And why not? Because we should be proud of it. Other countries are proud of their languages, and it differentiates us from others. And it's part of that innate sense of Irishness that we all have. So I would encourage that I always have to people that even if they only have a couple of fuckle, use it. You know, it's not about being absolutely grammatically correct. It's about enjoying and enriching and empowering yourself and your sense of identity by using the Irish language.
Excellent. And Leah, before we go any further, I suppose I've done my homework, my research on you. For those of us or those people that might be listening today that might know much about Ní Rida, for example, you said in a couple of your interviews that you face personal challenges and hardship. Your siblings raise each other and it has given you a strong sense of independence and an empathy for those who are struggling. Would you like to explain how that happened? I believe your mum and dad passed away when you were young, yeah?
They did. Well, my father, who people would have heard of, I suppose, Sean O'Rida, he died when I was around 4. And then my mother died, unfortunately. She was only 47. She died when I was 10. So that was a kind of a tough station, really. I know that lots of other people in this country have suffered hardships as well. So I suppose when you're in that position yourself, you do tend to have more empathy, perhaps, or sympathy because you've been in that situation and you overcome those personal challenges and difficulties. But like I always think, I'm one of these kind of Pollyanna type people. I'll always put the best foot out, and it's how you respond to adverse situations is shapes who you are. And I think it made me stronger in one regard. Obviously, it was a dreadful time, particularly in my teenage years, when you didn't have that kind of blueprint or guidance, if you like. And as brothers and sisters, we did raise each other, and we had great neighbours as well, I have to say that. But it was a different time back then. Because that was, my mother died in 1977. So, you know, going to school, all of that was quite tricky to navigate your place in the world. But look, it made me the independent person that I am. And it gave me that sense that, look, life throws curveballs at you and it's how you respond is the important thing.
And Sinn Féin, where did your allegiance to Sinn Féin begin?
Well, I would have always been very socially conscious, perhaps because of my surroundings. I come from quite a Republican area. And then if you spool fast forward to my life in 2011, I was a full-time mom, worked in television. And I took, obviously, as people know, I have a huge interest in the Irish language. And I saw that Sinn Féin were advertising for a National Gaelic officer. And I had a look into them and I thought their politics fit my own sense of identity as an Irish person, and I loved what they were doing, that they were that committed to putting policies in place so that the Irish language would be part of our culture in a much firmer way from a legislative point of view. So I took that position, delighted to have taken it, and of course the more I learned about Sinn Féin, the more I realised I was naturally that way in terms of who we are as Irish people, where we need to be going, and it was an organic process in one regard. And since then, I've been very heavily involved in community activism and talking to all kinds of people from all sorts of different backgrounds. I think Sinn Féin is very much about equality. It's very much about social justice. And it's very much about doing the right thing. And, you know, things like, we have huge inequality when we see the economy. You know, the economy should be serving the needs of the people and not the other way around. And where we see injustice, it has to be righted. And that's what Sinn Féin is about. And that's certainly what I'm about. But I might add, Ger, that as Uachtaráin na hÉireann, I want to be an Uachtaráin for everybody. I'm very, very proud to be a Sinn Féin candidate. But having said that, I want to be an Oath Drawn that is inclusive, that covers everybody, as indeed they are the politics of Sinn Féin in either case.
And indeed, you say that in several of your quotes. You're saying that you want to be a new president for New Ireland. Ireland has radically changed since the last presidential election. You want a more caring and inclusive society, a global inspiration when it comes to progressive social change. I have to ask you, though, in view of, you know, the Constitution, I know you're restricted, the President is restricted in the Constitution, but in view of the massive homelessness crisis, the hospital crisis, the cervical check debacle that is on our doorsteps at the moment, mm-hmm. the post offices closing, rural deprivation or rural dereliction, I suppose is the right word, endless list, really, how do you propose having, you know, making a dent in any doors as the President?
Well, you're right. There is restrictions. Obviously, the President's role is very much as a guardian and a safekeeper, if you like, of the Constitution. But within that parameter, there are things that you can do. And I certainly wouldn't be shying away from addressing the Oireachtas and reminding them as legislators that they have a duty and a care of responsibility to our citizens. I have travelled for the last 5 years during my work as an MEP, member of the European Parliament. I have met communities that have been absolutely deprived. It's unacceptable that we have food banks in every town and city in this country in 2018. It's just completely unacceptable to see kids sleeping in garda stations and the huge health crisis that we have. And being from rural Ireland myself, I know only too well the decline of rural Ireland. And I think this move that we have towards centralisation is really something very, very worrying, particularly for those of us who live in rural Ireland. So I think it's about the President being able to lead the discourse in what kind of a new Ireland we want. Where do we want Ireland to be? We need to write our own story. We need to involve the younger generation. And we need to remind and constantly, and I think the President's role should be of that, almost being the heartbeat, if you like, and the pulse of the nation, that as first citizen, you are entitled to go in and address the Houses of Oireachtas and say, be the watchdog and hold them to account and say, look, we cannot tolerate a society where we have those food banks, where we have kids without a home, all of the issues that you mentioned. And I think the President would be very much, or should be very much in that vein, where we are looking at a humanitarian approach and providing the values, dignity of the individual has to be taken into consideration. So I think that's the role of the Presidency, to be that watchdog for the Irish people and to press the Oireachtas into doing the right thing. Now, they're legislators, but nonetheless, you do have that role as a president to lead the way, if you like, to be that beacon of hope for all of our people. And that includes the North, of course, North, South, East and West. So I wouldn't be shy in doing that. I know there's different rules and regulations that the government have to approve speeches before you give them. But I know previous presidents, both women, in fact, didn't exactly follow that line. So I think there has to be a little bit of flexibility there. There's obviously other things you can do as well in terms of creating a discourse that you invite people in, that you create think tanks, that we look after our carers, that we have, you know, educational scholarships. There is a whole load of initiatives that you can start off, you know, fair wages, all of that. So I already have a program of work in place that I'm fleshing out, listening to people on the ground, what they want. And I think the most important thing is for the ordinary Irish person to become involved in that. Start looking at the overall picture of where we want our children's lives to be in the next 7 years.
Absolutely, and I'm sure there are not many people listening that wouldn't agree with that. You mentioned the President's role and, you know, keeping up to date with things that are going on outside of Áras an Uachtaráin. Do you believe that there's a need for a President in Ireland?
I absolutely do, because if you're just going to have the government representing Ireland, you're going to have a very narrow view in one regard, because it depends on who the government of the day is, whereas the President is above politics in that regard, and the President therefore has to be that pulse of the nation and has to be fully in place in terms of being the global leaders, if you like.
Do we need the expense of it?
Sorry?
Do we need the expense of it? I the reason I ask that is you're probably aware one of the candidates or one of the hopeful candidates were quoted yesterday, I believe, as saying they were willing to forfeit the remuneration for the President.
I think in one regard that's kind of making a mockery of it, and, you know, obviously there are certain dragons and other people that are running in this race that are millionaires already, and it's well for them that they don't have to look for any money. I think the President, in terms of their salary, is exorbitant. And we would certainly, and indeed Sinn Féin, are drafting up legislation to say that the president's wage should only be that of a senior government minister, and rightly so. It is expensive, of course it is. But look, you are the head of the state, and you have to represent that state in some fair way. That doesn't mean to say that I'm certainly not an individual who's very fond of pomp and ceremony. I like to be very much of the people. So I wouldn't be looking at that type of ceremonial duty, that it's all about the show. It needs to be much more substantial than that. But certainly in terms of those who are saying they'll forfeit the wage, that I don't think is a good enough reason, because some of these people are looking at Ireland as a big corporate industry, which we're not. We are not we are not Ireland Inc.
So you're saying effectively it will be seen as a mockery of the presidency to say that you'd forfeit the salary?
I think in one regard it is, because you have to look at it in the context of those who are saying it. Those who are saying that can well afford to retire for life, because, you know, they are millionaires already, and they probably, you know, received a lot of money from their private interests in being private developers and business people. That's what they are, they're business people. I don't think a business person should be withdrawn the hearing. I think it should be somebody who has the qualifications in terms of political life already, and who has proven themselves in that arena, which I have done so in the European Parliament and continue to do so even as I'm going around my business campaigning for the Oghtarántacht. It's much wider than that. So I think it's a bit of a stunt just to say that. You have to see the substance. You know, obviously, as I said, the wage is far too much. It's not a heart surgeon. And as I said, we are going to be saying, look, the president should only be on the same salary as the government, senior government ministers.
Now, you mentioned a couple of moments ago that pomp and ceremony are not a thing for you. Was that the reason why, when you were announced on Sunday last outside Croke Park for just before the ladies' football final, was that the reason you didn't take questions or make a statement to the media?
No, I actually made quite a lot of statements. I was on TG Cahir, I was on RTE, I was on Radio na Gaeltachta, and I think perhaps the Dublin media, I would question how they value our Irish language media, that they don't count that as media. And I wanted, first of all, to give them the first crack of it, if you like, because they are equally as important, if not more so, than the English-speaking media. So why not? So it's absolutely untrue to say that I wasn't answering questions. It was about targeting those loyal people to me and to our Irish country in terms of our language. So it's untrue to say I didn't do media, because, as I said, I did RTE, TG Cahir, Radio na Gaeltachta, the Cork Examiner. So I think that was the Dublin media getting slightly teased off that I wasn't giving them all the time. And this,
but it was, you're aware it was reported that you were announced, but there was no questions. What do you say to people?
Can I say as well, it was also announced, listen to this for ridiculousness, it was also announced that I was from Dublin and that I was 52.
No, you're a proud Cork woman, and we're proud to say that you're
exactly
a Cork.
Exactly, so you know, you can't believe everything you hear in the papers or read.
Okay. What do you say to people that, and, you know, I give it as a, not as a personal remark, but as something that has been said to me. What do you say to those that say, you know, Asher, you know, you've exceeded too fast and too furious in the Sinn Féin party. People might like Leah Ní Riada, but don't like Sinn Féin. What do you say to those people?
I think people have to look at the body of work that I have done since my time serving as a member of the European Parliament. I did get 125,000 votes first time around, so I'm obviously, people relate to me. They see that I'm not above the ordinary person. They can see that they can relate to me. And I think that's what's probably the popularity element of it in that regard. I'm just a normal Ban Gaelic, as I say, and my work speaks for itself. As for Sinn Féin, I think people, the more that people are learning about Sinn Féin, the more that they realise that, yes, Sinn Féin are the only party that are committed to social justice and to equality right across the board. So, you know, we just have to wait and see. Like one day, the people of Ireland have their own minds, they're an intelligent electorate, and they will decide themselves who should be the Uachtaráin.
Now, speaking of records and proven track records and everything, I suppose you know what I'm going to ask you next. Some years ago, you're described as not having a flip-flop moment, and the HPV vaccination, you've since tried to clarify that. Where are you right now on it?
Gotcha. I am the same way as I was several years ago, which means I am completely in favour of the HPV vaccine. There is no question about it. There is no ambiguity about it. I think it's a wonderful thing. anything that saves lives has to be given and has to be promoted and has to be absolutely pushed, because it's a wonderful thing. So I think it's ridiculous that this keeps coming up and up and up when I have been so clear in my views on that. I never said on any given day that I was against it.
Is that why,
in favour of it.
Is that why your party leader, Mary Lou McDonnell, has said that she's uncomfortable to state whether or not your own family have received the vaccination?
Well, Jar, would you, in all fairness, think it's proper and right to be divulging my children's personal and private medical history to anybody? I wouldn't ask any parent to do that. They're not running for the ORIS, and I think it's a very sinister move by journalists to constantly be looking for my children's medical history. That's completely not acceptable.
Well, I'm certainly not looking for it.
It should be stated that my children, as I said, are not running for the ORIS, and I reiterate again and again, I am in favour of the HPV vaccine.
Okay, and that's fine, and it's not me asking, I'm just going on reports that I'm reading. Maria Cahill, another banana skin moment. How do you see Sinn Féin's handling of that controversy?
Well, firstly, in regards to Maria Cahill, I can't even imagine what she must have gone through. I don't think any amount of anybody from any sector of society, any apology will never, ever undo what she has gone through. And I hope that she has the support and the care that she needs to get her through this. It's probably something she'll never get over. But look, I hope that she will get through it in some way and that she'll come out a stronger person at the end of it all. But we cannot undo the past. We also have to look to the future, however, because I keep saying if we keep going backwards, we can't go forward. We learn lessons from the past.
When she said that...
We have to think to the future too.
Okay. When she said that Mary Lou McDonald's remarks were not sufficient, they didn't suffice, have you discussed this at party level? Have you aired these views of Mary Lou?
Well, Jar, I'm travelling all over the country, so we didn't discuss in detail any of these things. But as I said, I think any apology that anybody makes to Maria Cahill will never undo what was done to her, and it will never go far enough, because you simply can't undo the horrendous damage that was done. And it's now about trying to find some kind of way through that and closure for Maria Cahill and for anybody else that has suffered through the years.
Now, you said in a previous interview as well that you personally know Michael D. Higgins. He's proving what looks like a very clear and popular leader in the presidency at the moment. First of all, do you believe he has a wrongful advantage running as an incumbent president? And secondly, how do you see your chances, like, you know, because people, every second person is mad about Michael D. and the work that he has done. How do you see your chances taking him on?
Well, look, I think Michael D., first of all, as you say, I know him personally for 20 years, and he has done a very good job of being an ambassador for this country. But having said that, I don't think anybody, and it's not a personality contest in that regard, but I don't think anybody should run for office for 14 years without being contested. It shouldn't be gifted on anybody. You know, we have elections for a reason, so that there's a mandate given and that you're put in place by the people of this country. So they need that choice. For me, it's about the future. 2011 was a very different Ireland to where we are now. We have moved very solidly away from the dancing at the crossroads. And I think it's about a modern, progressive society. And that's what I'm offering, is energy, enthusiasm, passion, compassion, all of that. And that's what I will bring. So, again, I think people will look at Michael D. and say he's done a wonderful job. But it's now about the future and where we need to be going. And you need that dynamic, energetic passion, I suppose, that I bring to it.
You also say if you're elected, you become a custodian of our constitution. Correct. What will that mean to you?
Well, that means that obviously as a guardian and as a safekeeper of the constitution, that you ensure that you're legally bound, that anything that comes from the Oireachtas is checked over by the lawyers and by the constitutional lawyers, and that you keep that safe. One of the things I would be very strong on in this chair is obviously our neutrality. That's something that we should hold dear, and our sovereignty. And we haven't even touched on the work I've done in Europe in that. You know, I have dealt with all these issues on a European basis, and I have a track record in that. For instance, and I'll give you a small example, and people may not be aware of it, I proposed legislation which was absolutely voted in favour overwhelmingly by the European Parliament, that we safeguard the peace process and the Good Friday Agreement. And that is now Article 4 of the negotiations that are currently being talked about in terms of Brexit. So I think it's that type of outward-looking. We need to be more outward-looking as well. We need to be that kind of global leaders in that term of peace and stability, because we are in a rather precarious position the way the world is going in terms of politics and climate change and all kinds of other threats. And I think we need to be leading the light in that. And I have that experience, which I'll bring to the Office of the Oath of Toronto. But again, this is more about the Irish people taking ownership of where, what direction we need to be going as Irish people.
Speaking of directions, heading, going in directions, we're about 5.5, 6 weeks out from the big day. What kind of, you have your strategy in place, but you have a massive team behind you. I heard you praising your husband for looking after the domestic stuff. Mm-hmm. What size team do you have on your side?
Well, there are different people coming and going, I suppose. It's, you know, you have the usual press people and diary management and all of that. And then, of course, family. I actually have a very, people in Yall might know, my uncle Walter, he lives there in Yall. I've spent many of the time there. And so I have a good family around me as well that are very, very supportive. And that's the main thing. You know, you have to keep grounded in all of these things and be very focused on what you really, really want for this country and be committed. It's not a decision you make lightly. And I certainly didn't come to this conclusion in any other way other than being absolutely committed and just in giving that choice to the Irish people.
Are there any of the candidates in particular, apart from Michael Dee, obviously, Gavin or whoever else, is there any one of those candidates, are there any one of those candidates that you fear the most?
No, there isn't. Why would I? I mean, seriously, look at their track record. I think, as I said, you know, I'm an elected representative already. I have been around the communities for the last 5 years. I've been very much on the ground and active. I know where the pulse of the nation is in that regard, and I think you can't beat that kind of experience. I think a businessman coming into it is a very different kettle of fish, and I would be afraid that we're moving away from a direction that Ireland should be going, which is about the economy serving the needs of the people rather than the other way around. We're not a privatisation country up for sale, if you like, and so I hope and I expect and I trust the Irish people to do the right thing and elect a president who will be for the Irish people. And, you know, with that humanitarian approach where we see the individual having their dignity above all else, and that we are that caring, compassionate society that we have shown that we can be.
So you wouldn't be apprehensive or nervous about another banana skin moment in a head-to-head on RT?
Banana skin, like, you know, bananas are for eating.
Okay. And finally, you know, like the inauguration date, there's even controversy over that before the election takes place at all. Where are your views on that?
I would be very proud, as Uachtaran, as one of my first engagements, to go to that armistice commemoration, of course, because again, once you're Uachtaran here and you're above party politics, you were a president for all of the people.
Because you had Charlie Flanagan yesterday, the Minister for Justice, was it yesterday or the day before? He was pretty much putting a date in the diary already of the new president.
Yeah. Sure, that has to be done. That's the duty of the office, and I would be absolutely honoured to fulfil those duties.
Okay. That's excellent. Leah, thanks for taking the call. We can only wish you the very, very best of luck in your campaign.